If you see something, say something. At Reply, weird things come with any weird story you find on the web, and you can help make weirdthings.com even weirder. This episode of Weird Things is brought to you by Scam School Book 1, available right now. Folks, it's the compilation of over 80 tricks from the popular web series Scam School, starring Weird Things host Brian Brushwood. The material is from over 200 episodes. There's audio commentary on every trick, over 35 video demonstrations, and it's laid out beautifully. It's absolutely the future of instructional ebooks. You need to see it to believe it. Get all the information at scamschoolbook.com. And by Andrew Maine's Angel Killer, the brand new thriller novella available for only a dollar. In front of security cameras, a tourist vanishes from the top of the Empire State Building and mysteriously falls to her death moments later in Times Square. A young girl dies crawling out of her own grave after having been declared dead a year earlier. On Fort Lauderdale Beach, a missing World War II airman and his aircraft show up as if he only died hours before. They call the mysterious man behind these unnatural events the Warlock. To some, he's a messenger of a modern age of miracles. But to Jessica Blackwood, FBI agent and daughter of a legendary magic family, the Warlock is a trickster and a murderer, and she's the only one who can see through his deceptions. Angel Killer is available now on Amazon for only 99 cents. Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, weirdlings of all ages, welcome to this episode of Weird Things, the podcast recorded live in front of a live audience.
We assume they're live. It's kind of like a Turing test. We just assume, all things being equal, that they're probably alive because they sure sound alive.
We're fairly sure that they are not robots or fairies.
Maybe robot fairies.
Speaking for somebody who claims to neither be a robot or a fairy is Mr. Justin Robert Young.
Don't be so sure, sailor.
Spirit of openness, Mr. Brian Bri Brushwood.
Man, would you rather be a robot fairy or a fairy robot? I think I'd rather be a fairy robot.
Well, what? A fairy robot would be a robot constructed by fairies?
No, like a fairy robot would be just a gay robot, but a robot fairy would be a robot that looks a fairy.
Jeez. Go right there.
I think whatever I am, I'd like to just be accepted for what I am.
I think that's the best thing. I guess C-3PO is a robot fairy.
But if I was a robot fairy, I'd want to be like a Terminator. So if people didn't accept me.
Oh, so you'd be like a... Never mind.
For not accepting my robotness.
You're gonna
The more you guys talk, the more I'm thinking like T-1000 had a lot of conflicted feelings. You kind of figured that there's a lot going on.
He did. He had power issues and he was impersonating. He did a very convincing impression of a lady's voice, too.
Yeah.
He does, yeah.
So we settled that. Speaking of incredible mind-melting news, this week has been full of it. Oh my gosh. And I've been away in Italy. I'm like going on no sleep right now, so I'm going to be even more punchy and inarticulate than usual.
Yeah, that's not even an exaggeration. You said in the last how many hours since you said you can't sleep
like
on
two
planes.
In the last like 48. I'll tell the story of the werehooker maybe later on in the show.
Okay.
Okay. There's a tease.
It's not going to be much of a story. I'm going to have to try to convey the emotion of what happened and experience. But anyhow, I want to start with something really cool. We live in the age of awesomeness. There was the jet space age, the atomic age, the friggin' steam age, the suck age.
Yeah. By the way, what's up with the age? Since when does an age become like 15 years? Like, for historically, ages are like millennia long. And then we get to the 20th century, we're like, it's been 20 minutes. That was the 20 minutes age.
But like fast what move, happened Brian. In those millennia. Like Bupkis, nothing. A whole pile of butts happened in the millennia before. Now, like, you know, you go from April to June and 14 awesome things have happened, the likes of which had never been seen before in the world.
Yeah, Brian, we had like 1,000 years of like, hey, what do you think of this toga? Oh, that's cool. How about this toga? It's this age. It's the age of my toga going this way. Oh yeah, now I'm gonna fold my toga that way.
That's right, my toga. I mean, hem lines up, hem lines down.
Yeah. And before that, it was just 16 amoebas trying to fart on 17 other amoebas.
So what you're saying is as we ramp up, eventually an age is going to be like anytime something interesting happens. Like we have truly entered the age of the iPhone 16.
Oh, it'll be like, Brian, I'll have to like get an instant message from you. It'd be like, oh, it's the nanophobic immigrant age. What does this mean? Oh, we're making everything out of it. And 2 minutes later, Justin's like, oh, that's old hat. Now we're using this Pico electronic sort of stuff.
Now,
did you use your Amazon.com assembler to make it, you know? I'll be like, man, I slept through a bunch of ages because I was running from Italy to get away from the werehookers.
Oh, I've been asleep for ages.
Ages. So, all right. Dream team of awesomeness, okay? You ready for this?
Oh, my God. I know what you're talking about. This is awesome.
This is so a we've very got, obvious Avengers.
We've got Jackie coming. Chan. We've got Jean-Claude Van Damme. We've got Lorenzo Lamas from the Renegade days, which evidently Dog the Bounty Hunter probably watched a lot of.
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
Sure.
We've got David Hasselhoff, and we've got Don Johnson all together to play the roles of.
I was just like, when you started, I'm just like, man, maybe I'm thinking of the wrong story because this
doesn't sound. No, I totally knew you knew. I knew you were on the same wavelength. And I'm like, I'm not going to let Brian know where this is going, even though I just pretty much broadcast exactly where I'm going.
It's like, that's the dungeon master in you. Like the moment you know, oh, you think there's a trap there? Well, guess what? The trap is nested inside of a dragon.
AKA being a jerk. So you get Peter Diamandis, the guy who created one of the guys behind the X Prize, okay? Very forward-thinking guy. He's got a new book out called Abundance. Have not read it yet. Hear great things about it. I look forward to reading it and reviewing it. You've got Larry Page of Google. Maybe you heard of the company?
Never. I hope it turns into something for him. That's a silly name. It'll never take off.
You've got James Cameron. Okay? You got some really,
Wait,
really
the
smart
director?
People together.
The guy
They're
going to
hold a press conference tomorrow because they have a company called Planetary Resources.
Look, when you get that much science eggheads, there's no way whatever they're going to do is going to be very metal. It's probably going to be, you know, I don't know, we're planning to have a conference to discuss, you know, math numbers. They're going to invent a new mathematic symbol.
They had a very mild, understated press release befitting the kind of egos that have put themselves behind this project. Right, Andrew?
So this is from the press release, which they're going to announce tomorrow what they're going to be. And, you got Charles Sonoil, Ross Perot, another one. You've got a former NASA mission guy. Bunch of people involved, all heavy hitters. And so from the press release, they're going to overlay two critical sectors, space exploration and natural resources, to add trillions of dollars to the global GDP and help ensure humanity's prosperity.
It's minor.
I would just imagine like that reply all email with all those names on it, and they're passing around like the what is going to be the press release, and it's like, you know, Cameron's like, no, this really, no one's going to know what we're doing. We need to step it up. Like, how about several billion to the economy? No. Several trillion. We're going to fundamentally reshape what we think of natural resources.
So what everybody assumes they're going to do is they're going to announce a program, a company, the Planetary Resources, for mining asteroids.
Now, this is very weird because the minerals that
Because on the last episode of Weird Things, I talked about using space as a platform like FedEx or SpaceX.
Yeah, well, yes, I suppose that's true. But first of all, a couple things. Number one, they list some minerals that they might be mining, right? Or they're speculating about it. It's like, what do you got? You got nickel? You got iron? Aren't these in pretty abundant supply here on Earth?
Well, here's the thing. Two things. They are, but there's two ways to look at this. One is you might grab an asteroid, and you might find that you have a much, yeah. much higher ratio of iron and nickel to the rest of the material. And so to mine it is a lot easier.
Right.
Okay. Another thing is, yeah, they're abundant on Earth. If you want to build stuff in space, Brian.
Right. Now that is the thing, right? It's nickel outside the gravity well is worth more if you want to go to the stars than nickel inside the gravity well.
Wait, maybe they're making a horrible mistake, Brian. Maybe we should call them and tell them to call it off.
Hold on, we got it.
What are you guys doing?
Don't get all bent out of shape. I just thought it was interesting that those, it just from a profitability standpoint, I mean, they're not going to, I mean, the only thing I could think of, and this would be, you know, it would be awesome, would be if the way they mined it in space and then they just threw it down to Earth. Like just had this endless rain of, you know, landing in this Mojave Desert of these giant, you know, just giant chunks of aluminum.
Something tells me that doesn't reek of proper safety procedure.
That reeks of proper awesome procedure.
To have an unending, although you would, speaking of metal, that would be an awesome metal video shoot. If you just have, of like, you know, metal. Zach Wilde, like ripping a super sweet solo while, you know, molten hot aluminum rains from the sky.
It rains liquid metal from the skies.
So a big, big point of this is you know, according to one of these researchers, Mr. Lewis, this is in the Wall Street Journal, said asteroids could yield astronomical quantities of minerals such as iron and nickel. And I love the idea that it's astronomical quantities.
By definition.
So the exciting thing about this, we talked about this before. Once you start saying you have fixed costs for space exploration, the problem we've had before with heavily subsidized space exploration where you don't know the true cost of launching something on the space shuttle. You know, you could say, oh, well, you know, NASA will charge you $20,000 per pound. And you say, okay, well, I want to book 10 shuttle flights. Oh, no, this is just an introductory rate.
Right, right.
You know, versus a company that says like SpaceX, where you go to their website, spacex.com, and they list the price that call them up. Yes, I would like to put my secret space villain lair into orbit in 2 years. What's the cost going to be? And they'll quote you a price. I've tried this. It works.
Oh, my God. Can we prank call SpaceX and actually just and totally book something? Like, I don't even know what it would be. Like, get a plaque from all the weird things listeners.
We'll be like, hey, we want to call about putting up our secret space villain there. Oh, Mr. Zuckerberg, hold on 1 second.
What? That's the 21st century equivalent to wearing a monocle and a top hat. It's like you just get, oh, I'm sorry, it's Zucky on the other line. Can I take this? Hold on.
So the plan is you want to go get an asteroid. First part about space mine is have something to mine, mm-hmm. and basically try to bring it into an orbit. I think there's Lagrange points between Earth and the moon, sort of these stable sort of points where you could put it there.
Mm-hmm.
And you think about that, Brian, maybe like we could have like new jobs. We'd be like, all right, everybody, we're going to work. We're going to L2, the L7, Lagrange point 7 to work, you know, and hop on a rocket.
Well, Outland. Is that the one with the Sean Connery?
Yeah. The guy that was doing the rewrite of that.
It was, yeah. So it's like basically it's high noon on a space station where there or an asteroid mining colony. That could be real. And that's what I loved about that movie is that it felt very, very visceral, very real. What were you about to say, Justin?
I guess my biggest question is, number one, you know, what are the elements to this that made them kind of go all in and want to launch with such a big roster of names and money now, and when does it start? Those are my two kind of big questions. What makes them think that the future is here, and when does the future start?
So if we're speculating, I gotta guess that the most significant advance is that McDonald's style menu that Andrew was just talking about. The fact that SpaceX has, I mean, for all our high-minded dreams about you know, we three talk about helium balloons up to the stratosphere, you know, to space elevators. But but we're talking orders of magnitude of cost savings already in our hands with what SpaceX is doing with privatizing space travel. So it could be that that alone merits all of a sudden the economics change, and all of a sudden there's literal gold and then there are asteroids.
And we talk a lot about SpaceX, but there are other companies out there doing exciting stuff. And well, I think we'll do on another episode. I'll talk about some of them too. And love SpaceX, super fans, and the ones I think kind of the obviously clear in the most visible foreground with that. But there are some other, like, you know, Blue Origin, Jeff Bezos, I think X-Core. There's a bunch of other companies there, and that's what's exciting is some of the same entrepreneurs that were behind the boom of the internet and building great companies are now getting behind space exploration. And for, you know, Jim Cameron, Larry Page et al., guys with a ton of money, forward-thinking technical guys, they look at this and they say, okay, how do we get ahead of the curve?
You know, I guess we should also mention Armadillo Aerospace, John Carmack.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And how much of it do you think is a case where I'm so interested in how much of reality is shaped by science fiction when we were children. So it's like, think about the type of minds who recreated or who created the internet world, your Jeff Bezos is, or we'll say, you know, John Carmack with the video game space and programming. We're all kids who grew up in the late 70s, early 80s, and had things that excited us. And those dreams are still alive in us. And now we have, and I'm saying we, like, I'm not one of them. I'm some jerk who, you know.
I know who you pal around with, Brian. You're pretty much,
you're one. But the point is, like, if you look at the technology and you see how similar our cell phones, you know, became to Star Trek communicators, and it's obvious that the science fiction influenced reality. And now we're seeing that with dreams of space travel and rocketry. I don't know. It's very inspiring to me, I guess, is what I want to say.
When we're in an age where, you know, we come from, you know, the three of us come from admittedly a very free market mentality because we believe that the most important resource is intelligence of people. And the more access you have to that, the more people thinking, the better things you have rather than one small group trying to control that. And we live in a period where a very successful person can privately, you know, control enough resources to do some of the most amazing things you can happen. There are only four entities that can put a rocket into orbit right now: United States, Russia, China, and SpaceX.
And Elon Musk personally.
Yeah.
He could just throw that sucker up there.
And the last one did that. Last I checked, for under $1 billion, built that. And that's because, you know, when we talk about like a platform or service, you know, living in the United States is like having a platform. You have access to incredibly talented people who come from around the world. You have, you know, access to groups of people, institutions, things like that, that make that possible. And now you've got people who say, you know, the space as a platform, you know, when we can put our equipment on a flight and pay FedEx rates, well, style rates, and start figuring out, like, you know, if you have access to 500 tons of iron, you know, of iron or nickel or whatever in orbit, what could you make from it?
Man, but what do you think? I guess that's the other question, too. We would have to figure out so much about manufacturing in zero G. Because it's like, so let's say we got the metal there. It's like, what do we do with it? You have to build like an industrial rolling press or, you know, machining tools in space in zero G.
Yeah, a lot of technical problems. We need a lot of smart young people to solve these.
It's crazy.
And smart old people.
No, just the young ones.
So, Andrew, do you think that there is any, would you like to speculate that there is any element of this announcement that, you know, might be, if there was some like crazy advancement that they are kind of sitting on or that, you know, could be a something that is not in the picture for us right now? Do you have any speculation on that?
I would say that the two things I keep waiting to happen, one is, and what relating to this is possibly the announcing a private mission to an asteroid, sending a private robotic probe to an asteroid. And that might be the thing we might hear tomorrow, is to say, hey, we have a plan to do something by 2016 or something based upon if SpaceX or whoever else, the platform is available. We want to book things and we want to do an intercept mission with an asteroid as a proof of concept with something and put some extra. That would be kind of an exciting thing. That's the one thing I've been waiting. I think we may have happened. I think we've heard rumblings of that before. And maybe dude, like, I think we remember something about Exxon or something mentioning something like that. So that would be a potentially interesting thing.
Imagine this, right? They're out there, they're doing the press conference and everybody's out on stage, all these like super gigantic names. And then all of a sudden, it's like conspicuous by his absence is James Cameron. And they're like, we're going to send a probe to the asteroid. And like, in fact, James Cameron's there right now. And James Cameron pops up on a webcam. And he's like, dude, this is my thing now. I show up in weird places. I'm James Cameron.
He's like, and I'm totally making Avatar 2 right now. And he's got a bunch of little paper cutouts he made and he painted. And he just holds them in front of the camera. It's like,
yes.
I spent all my money getting here.
James Cameron has so much money now. I can't believe that he hasn't already booked a flight to space. I mean, it's $20 million for a trip on Space Adventures. Is that right?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, I have a coupon, but yeah.
That just seems...
Did you get the Groupon on that? It was a pretty good Groupon.
Groupon in space.
I think Cameron's thought about it. I think that he might be waiting for the next level to do that at, in the whole deep sea exploration, you know, the deep sea Challenger. I don't think he just wants to go. He doesn't just want to go there as a tourist.
Right. He wants to do it in style and to have a mission. I know he's talked about shooting a movie in space and shooting a documentary up there.
I love here is the idea that, so we get a movie, Avatar, most successful film of all time. The bad guys there are going to other places to go mine them. And it's like he's sitting there watching his own movie for about the 50th time or the 500th time. And he's like, you know, it's not a bad idea.
He's like, there's a reason these guys have so much money. It's because they went to space and went mining. That's maybe this.
I'll be cooler to the blue chick and all that.
It would worth it for them to hire in some capacity Giovanni Ribisi, right? Like they kind of have to do that.
Wait, which one is Giovanni Ribisi? Was he the bad guy?
Yeah, he's bad. I would think he'd go the opposite way. He'd be like, I totally won't hire Giovanni Ribisi because we got to be good guys. I'll let Sigourney Weaver run the project.
Giving you a full pledge to never hire Giovanni Ribisi.
So it's very exciting time. Absolutely exciting. The other thing I think we may see sooner or later, and by the way, SpaceX has said that they may be pushing back the launch another week to the ISS.
Oh, okay. Well, how far off are we from that now?
Well, it was going to be the 30th, and now they're looking at maybe doing it, I guess, the 7th or so.
Oh, my God, it's really happening. Like, this is all, like, I remember us just talking about it as crazy speculation and things to come, but now it's real, and it's here.
And now it's science fact.
That's right. Once was a beautiful dream.
Speaking of real, here's a real commercial message for you from one of our sponsors.
Oh, hell yeah. This one comes from Justin Frazier. Justin Frazier would like to say that he's been mainlining Weird Things.
Oh,
he wants to sponsor an episode and see if there is anything that we had left to say on the concept of the singularity. I'll get to that in a second.
Oh, my gosh.
While I tell you that we also need to give a shout out to Gina, who is Justin's coworker and unwillingly has to listen to us. So if there's one thing we can give, it's a shout out to Gina, who doesn't necessarily want us to say her name.
For some Hi, weird Gina. Things. I just would love to see the HR report filed out. He's like, he's always listening to Weird Things. What weird things? Weird things?
Hi, Gina. Oh, gosh, that doesn't sound right, does it?
Hi, Gina. No. Hi, Gina. That's why I'm going to name my third child is Hi, Gina.
So real quick, because I know we've talked about the singularity a lot on the show, let's just get one word that we have not said on the singularity so far.
Oh, yeah, this guy that wants to talk about the singularity. My gosh.
It's been a long time since we talked about it.
So Brian, one word that you haven't said so far about the singularity on this show.
Happy.
All right.
I think it'll be a happy
thing. I'm
going
to go ahead with my word being... stuff. I really didn't have a joke there.
I'm pretty sure you've said stuff before, but that's fine.
All right. How about Maleficent?
Ooh.
Maleficent is something, that's a word I've not said about the singularity. Andrew, word that you have not said about the singularity.
Imminent.
Ah, there we go. So
let me just unpack that for a moment, okay? We have a story we talked about before was the idea that we may be fast approaching being able to solve the Turing test on a previous episode.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We've got credible people, several credible people announcing a press conference to go mine asteroids and basically to open up. You get boons when you have resources you tap into that you didn't have before, that you didn't realize you had before. Oil was a nuisance for most of human history. Then we realized, hey, this oil stuff is pretty awesome. It's right. Compact hydrocarbon. I can carry energy vast distances. I can get it to do work. You know, I was just traveling in the airplane, and I said to the person next to me, who I kept awake for the entire flight, traveling with me is always fun, and we're looking down over the Italian Alps. I said, you know, up until 150 years ago, the only way you could get from point A to point B on land was either on your power or the power of an animal.
Wow. So nothing but chemosynthetic energy.
Yeah. So now, you know, we fly over. I just flew over the Atlantic Ocean. You know, flew over powers of flight. Oh, yeah, it's all right. And it's like, it flew over the Atlantic Ocean. You know? You know how many people died trying to make that journey? And we're like, eh, the peanuts were kind of stale. And my Diet Coke was a little bit flat. And it's like, it was 8 hours. It was hell. You know, you flew over the Atlantic Ocean. And we're reaching this point now where the next big exciting thing, we've had this information technology boom. We've had the internet. We're creating vast amounts of resources. We have companies like Facebook, which are worth billions of dollars. And what do? They just help you and talk to your friends. But that's a very important resource. Now we're getting into this material resource age. Tomorrow, it starts tomorrow, ladies and gentlemen, where we get three very credible people with access to billions of dollars of capital who said, you know what? We're looking up at the sky and there's stuff up there we want. We're going to go get it to bring it here and to build outwards. Very big deal. Very big deal. And we talk about big inflection points when things change, when you get that much intellectual capital, that many brilliant people saying we're not afraid of looking like idiots because we think it's practical. That's exciting.
So I guess also, I mean, talking about the economics to make it happen, I guess gold is creeping up on what? It's $1,500 an ounce now. How many ounces in a pound? Is it 12 or 16?
In a troy ounce? I think it's 12. No. But a pound is 16 normally.
Okay.
I don't know.
Right. Well, because I can never remember because there's fluid ounces and there's 16 fluid ounces in a pint.
Yeah, there's troy. Yeah, I we're idiots.
Point is, let's just say
shouting at their computers right now at how stupid
they're like,
you are.
Idiots, idiots. But it's like,
It's like 14,000 ounces in a pint.
In a bonus?
A poundite?
It's in a
pint of ice cream?
In a Newton? So, point
12
is,
ounces per troy pound.
Okay, gotcha. So we'll say 12 ounces per troy pound. So all of a sudden, we make it to where roughly you're looking at $20,000 for a pound of gold. If SpaceX can get to a point where we're able to throw objects into space for $1,000 a pound, all of a sudden, you know, it's like $1,000 to get that pound up there, and then whatever mojo you got to do to get the gold and then bring it back. I mean, it's profitable. Money.
I had a very frustrating discussion with a very prominent skeptic and a spokesperson for a major scientific organization at one of our skeptic meetings where he was very dismissive of the idea of space mining because at this time, you know, gold was something like $800 an ounce or whatever it was. And he explained that how the cost of launching things into orbit was 10 times the price of gold.
Right.
And I'm saying this guy's a physicist, and I'm trying to explain to him. I said, well, you know, the goal of space mining is not to go into Earth gravity, put gold bricks onto a spaceship, and launch it into space.
Right. Yeah. It's sending it up empty. The craft is going up with
the
expensive part is not coming back. The expensive part is getting off planet, and that's when you're going up empty with maybe a pickaxe.
Yeah, exactly. We're sending a couple of M80s and an ice pick up there. You know, right. That's what we're doing to send it here slowly. And so it was frustrating. This skeptical resistance to the would not acknowledge the very simple apparent flaw in it because he had this nice little formula, costs this much to get a pound into space. It's not worth it. It's like it was frustrating. But now we got guys who are very super smart who see beyond that. But I think too, Brian, to think about this and Justin is it's not just a matter of what we can bring back there or what we can do, you know, it's partially what we can do with it up there. So if you have access to gold, if you have access to all these raw materials, you bring a 500-ton asteroid and you have enough of these materials into some Lagrange point or whatever to build big solar farms, to build big solar collectors and energy production systems, it becomes the cost. And it's not going to be easy at first. Nobody thinks it's going to be easy, and there are going to be a lot of problems we have to solve, but we know it's an eventuality. But you start building energy production in space using materials from space.
Yeah, no, and I think that's the important thing that we've – there's a lot of things that need to be solved, and there's no benefit to waiting till later for us to start working on those issues.
Yeah, I mean, it depends if there are better problems to be solved now, but if it's a problem that excites these guys, then absolutely. So you ready for another venture, another scheme to go beyond?
There's no way anything else awesome and interesting and weird happened this week. Clearly, the Avengers of Weird is the biggest release, unless you got a Dark Knight Rises in your back pocket.
Well, we've talked about doing our own expedition.
Yeah.
You know, a weird things. We joked about doing a Kickstarter project, the idea, hey, what if we went to go find Bigfoot? What if we did go try to do this? So on Kickstarter, there's a documentary expedition to the Congo with killer rewards. And the premise is this guy, Stephen McCullough, wants to get a group of people and go to the Congo to maybe try and find a dinosaur.
Oh, hells yeah. So you must mean like dinosaur bones or the corpse of a dinosaur or a fossilized dinosaur egg. That must be what you mean, right?
That is exactly what I mean if I did not mean what I say. What I'm saying is a dinosaur, a whole dinosaur, not a part of a dinosaur, not a toenail from a dinosaur.
What does a dinosaur look like? Does he look yes. like an egg?
Then why are you trying to sit on him like an egg?
Do I look like a theropod?
That's awesome. You know,
there's the story of in the Congo of, you know, rumors of sauropod looking dinosaurs that the natives talk about, and even better, not just natives, we're talking pygmies talk about it. Okay, and a pygmy says something's real,
dude. Pygmy don't play around.
Yeah, you know, you come to a village of Danny DeVito's, and they're like, "Hey, listen, over there,
by the dinosaur." That's offensive to pygmies, by the way. Don't call them Danny DeVito's.
I think we'd all like to be Danny DeVito, so I reject your offensive there.
Danny DeVito is so awesome, and he just
that's the legend of the Mokole Mbembe, which people have said that they've seen this before. By that people, I mean people who live there. And so part of this expedition is to try to find this. They want to look for other species, not just you're like, all right, you want dinosaurs? Like, how about I raise you some insects you've never seen before? Is that cool?
All right.
Well, all right. Well, let's look at it like this.
Okay, how about a man-eating fish? Do you want that too? That's what they're going to try to find too.
Oh, yes.
Wait, what?
They're also looking for a man-eating fish.
It's just a guy eating a fish.
Yeah. Hey, it's me. I'm Joel. Meet the fish.
All right, I hear some skepticism, Justin. You're a little bit, all right, how about one more thing? All right, let me top it off. I'm going to give you dinosaurs. I'm going to give you new species of insects. I'm going to give you man-eating fish. And how about dog-sized tarantulas?
I'm sorry, it sounded like you said dog-sized tarantulas. But you couldn't have said that because that would have been crazy talk.
Technically, they said canine-sized tarantulas because they wanted it to sound more scientific. But
So this is basically Land of the Lost.
It really is.
Like, if they just said, oh, we're going to go to the Land of the Lost right now, Marshall, Will, and Holly are going to go on a routine expedition, and we're going to find canine-sized tarantulas, dinosaurs, and the kind of adventure that you can only experience on the big screen.
So, expedition right now, it's on Kickstarter. They need to raise $26,000 to get there. They're at $10,762. All right. Now that 10,000 of that came from one donor at the beginning of the project. So far they've only raised $762 outside of that. They've been featured on MSNBC and Today Show for all the amount of exposure, it's apparent that people aren't taking them as seriously as they would a new iPhone stand.
Do you think it's
that needs to be an element of our Kickstarter project? Is we're going to do a Bigfoot expedition to make some sort of iPhone accessory?
Yeah,
you know?
we're going to answer the age old question: Does Bigfoot prefer Android or iOS? That's how we're going to make it relevant.
Oh, you know he's got to be running like some sort of Linux variant out there.
Oh no, he's so rooted his Android, his Galaxy.
Yeah, we'll be like, hey, it's Bigfoot. And like, oh no, I'm Richard Stallman. Why do people keep saying that? It's called GNU because GNU's not Linux. You know, we're like, oh, sorry. I totally see him running. It's sort of weird. He's like, he'd be like total neckbeard hacker. His BlackBerry guys would really be made from BlackBerries.
What was that, Justin?
Do these guys have any experience in these kind of expeditions? Like, are they just a bunch of hayseed rubes?
Well, here's the guy who's doing this, Stephen McCullough. He'll be the leader for the expedition. He was born in Springfield, Missouri. So right there. He studied biology at Missouri State University. No word if he got his degree in that. He's been involved in humanitarian research projects in Central and South America, including a 3-month expedition to the Brazilian Amazon.
I think you guys are focused on the wrong. I'm not worried about his qualifications. I'm worried about the qualifications of there being any chance of a living dinosaur in the heart of Africa.
I know. You want to know what? Because you said that dude's name, and I immediately wanted it to be Bruce McCullough and the kids in the hall going to find the dinosaur of the Congo.
Bruce McCullough playing Bigfoot.
Justin Robert Young, Brian Brushwood, and Andrew Main being the name, along with a crew of people who want to help us out when we do our expedition. So I think we could raise more money than this.
Yeah. Sure.
Then over the 10,000, I think we could. I think we could totally do it. I think we need to find.
I'm all for. Let's find a semi worthwhile cause.
Semi.
Yeah.
Well, something we could go do. Like, I guess no. We just need a beast. We need to find a beast.
Yeah.
That we can track down.
Should we take an established beast or should we make up our own? Because here's the thing. If we make up our own beast to go find, we can trademark the name and have secure licensing rights to the whole thing so that we can make a mint on that. That'll fund the Kickstarter right there.
We can find the rape ape.
I think if we want to have the problem this guy's having right now is there's apparently a credibility gap.
Yeah.
He's got to make it a believable one.
When you got 10 grand from your grandmother to start your project and you've had this much exposure and you've raised $762, of which, it's come from a total of 23 backers. I'm just saying.
Wait, and they were on MSNBC?
What's that?
Well, you know how it is. It's
23 backers.
It's like a news of the weird thing, or like nobody's taking them seriously. They're laughing.
And now here's a few morning chuckles from Kickstarter.
Exactly.
This hairy knuckled weirdo decided he wanted to go to the Congo to find a dinosaur. Laugh at him with us.
Well, I mean, you go to the Kickstarter page and you get the guy. You know, one of them's throwing a broken diamond. They're both throwing kind of broken diamond club things, and they're in some store, and you see a rack full of Crocs behind them. It's kind of got a dude, bro, let's like go to the Congo kind of totally do some science.
I don't know.
So I think next week I'll come up with a proposal. I'll bring up my suggestion, and we'll take it to a vote with our audience.
Yeah, no, actually, why don't we can have whoever wants to sponsor next week's episode. They can name whatever the beast is that for us to attack.
All right.
And I love
it. I think we got to figure it out. This is gonna take a lot of careful deliberation. We're gonna have to find exactly where we want to go and then ask for money. But I think the opening ask doesn't start for less than $50,000.
Well, I think it depends on what we're doing.
Well, I'm sorry. In my head, I just kind of got caught up that it's going to need a submarine.
Well, we'll see.
Rent a submarine.
So, do we have a commercial? a sponsor?
We actually do. This is brought to you by CoverVersions.tv. They just started their second season. Here's the deal. CoverVersions.tv is a great way to get fun, awesome recipes for cooking stuff, and you can watch the guy who puts it together, whose name is Lucas Brown, locified in the chat room. You can watch him cook stuff up, and also he picks an awesome playlist of really awesome covered music to listen to while he makes it. So learn how to make some stuff.
You have a whole themed event.
Yeah, make him. Yeah, watch him make some awesome stuff. Learn to make it yourself and get turned on to some super hip music. It's CoverVersions.tv. Second season is now on and popping. 16 episodes. Check it out.
Awesome. Yeah. Check that out. Please, 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 please. Again, if somebody's putting something up here, sponsoring something, a podcast or whatever on the Weird Things, chances are they're weird like us and weird like you, and it's worth checking out.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
We're not mainstream here, folks. That's what I'm trying to say. These are your peers. So we'll do this, and then I'll do Werehooker, okay?
Yes.
Yeah, by the way, we should make it clear that you're saying Werehooker, not Werehooker. Like, you're not looking for the hooker. Like, where hooker's at?
Werehooker. Andrew confused.
Werehooker. that's how he solicits a prostitute in Italy. Walks around.
So we got a Benjamin Kai, couple of one's 19, one's 21. They just got busted for doing something in a forest in Utah.
There are forests in Utah? I thought that Utah was all stones. Looks like Mars. That's all I think about when I think of
Utah. No, Utah's pretty cool. Utah's got some pretty cool stuff there. So they got busted for doing something in a forest there.
Okay.
Oh, we're trying to figure out. Drinking caffeine.
No. No. The caffeine and other substances may have influenced this idea, though.
I'm going to say that they were arrested trying to summon Beelzebub.
Ooh, witchcraft. Yeah, no, I can see
no,
that.
No, wait a minute. No. They got into a fight with the devil who tried to take his soul, but instead of playing a fiddle in Georgia, it was an accordion in Utah.
I'm trying to think of Devil Went Down to Georgia, but like in a polka version.
No. I'll add a little more clue here. It involved making things.
Were they making like counterfeit somethings? Were they faking Bigfoot, big feet? Bigfoot dental casts they were making.
No.
You sure?
Were they minting counterfeit
currency?
Gasoline.
Counterfeit gasoline? It's milk with an unleaded sticker on it.
So, U.S. Forest Service law enforcement officer James Schaeffler was on foot patrol in this area when he came across blankety blank. Because of his time in the military, he has extensive experience identifying blankety blank. As he investigated blankety blank, he noticed blankety blank. Upon further investigation, he discovered that the blankety blank led to a blankety blank, which was made with blankety blank, blankety blank, blank.
Oh, man.
Okay. Landmines?
Yeah, some kind of explosives.
By elves and took them to an elf village.
No. Okay, it's got to be explosive or IEDs. Yeah, improvised explosive devices. That's got to be what it is.
I'm going to go right in, kind of close. Not explosives, but like booby traps, bungee sticks. They took a very popular trail there. They took a huge heavy rock, fastened spears and spikes to it, had it suspended from a tree with a tripwire.
They were making traps? Like, so people would die going out on a hike?
Yeah, they were playing the Hunger Games with picnickers, okay? They were trying to eat that, or there was a freaking predator loose that they didn't tell anybody about.
I was going to say, yeah.
This is great. This
if
is
it
like...
If it bleeds, we can kill it.
Yeah.
And by it, I mean Greg,
and it's from,
who hikes
13.
This trail every week.
What was that,
so
Andrew?
They built up these shelters with booby traps all around them. Just, and this is a forest where families go hiking through.
Do you think this is all like viral marketing for the Hunger Games? Like they actually were hoping people would die. You get some hipsters from a San Francisco advertising firm who they're like, we got an idea. This is gonna blow up the Hunger Games even bigger. You go down to Utah, start digging trenches.
Well, because that's what everybody says with the Hunger Games, is they're like, oh, well, we wouldn't actually find entertainment in this kind of wanton death. And then meanwhile, boom, some dude dies in Utah. And we're like, and like the guys at the advertising firm are like, see, we're paying attention now. When the revolution has begun. Split us into districts. We're ready for the Hunger Games. Wait, no, it's still horrifying. Do you want to go see our movie anyway?
It's a cautionary tale.
Really? I'm
so there you go, kids. I know making tree forts and traps and stuff is fun, but don't actually make ones that will murder people unless you're being hunted by a predator or trying to take down the empire.
There you go. I was about to say,
Jennifer Lawrence.
It's not really. It's not for us to tell other people what they can and can't do.
Now I'm going
to
go out on the limb here.
It's on us to tell them not to murder people in the woods.
Nah, look, I'm not going to sit in judgment of other people. It's the different people have different cultures and
yes. So I got a real quick story. It's not a story. It's just that kind of a
where.
So I'm in this village. Yeah. It's called St. Vincent, right? And so it's in the Italian Alps. Amazing amount of history. There's castles every you're driving through the valleys and you look in like every five or six kilometers, you look up and you see castles. There's castles everywhere because it was a trade route. It was like a border. And so it's just been heavy, a lot of history there. Second largest city in the Roman Empire was located near there at one point. And the villages are up kind of on the hills and you have these walkways that are stone and you look over and you got a 20-foot drop down below. Little old tiny buildings. And so I'm walking back late last night, leaving one of the events was held in this casino. And I leave the casino, and it's probably 3 or 4 a.m., dark out, it's cold. You look up, you see the snow-capped mountains or just the stars above there and the wind coming in from the Alps. And it's eerie. It's dark, not a whole lot of streetlights there. And so I'm walking along on the cobblestone path. And I hear something. I hear this. Psst. Psst.
Hey, mister.
Yeah. Hey, mister. Very, very close. Okay. It's I look Carnicale. Over, and there's a woman, young woman. She's got a dark complexion, stylish sort of hair, dress, not unattractive at all. She didn't look like a street person, but she was a street walker. And Italy has a very funny rule. Prostitution is legal, but being a pimp is not.
Whoa.
So
it's like, wait, it's legal to be a lady of service, but you can't hire somebody to do your contract negotiations on your behalf.
Yeah, you don't. That was as it was explained to me, but Italians seem sort of fuzzy on their own civics, so they could have been wrong. But anyhow, so I look over and she's going, psst, psst, and I've not ever engaged in the services of a professional hooker, nor amateur for that matter. Ed wasn't inclined. And
you're skipping the details. Like, what does she say? Like, is there a language issue? Does she have to pantomime out?
Well, I'm on the other side of the street. Side of the street, and I see this woman just emerge from the shadows, okay?
Like
and it's like something out of the movie Blade, okay? And she's like, psst, psst. And so I try not to make eye contact, so I keep walking, and so I hear this talking, this sort of low-speaking kind of English, can't quite make out the words. I keep walking, and then I hear footsteps behind me, okay? And I don't want to look over my shoulder and then be like, oh, yes, come talk to me. Let's negotiate a price, because let me blow everything that I made, you know, lecturing here on the services of a prostitute.
Right.
And penicillin. So I keep walking. And I hear these foots on cobblestone, and I turn around and I can't see anybody.
It's a ghost.
Could be. I keep walking a little little further, and I hear this voice following me, like, little freaked out. Little freaked out. Card-carrying skeptic, little freaked out, okay? I look over. I see a row of cars. I can't see anybody, okay? I keep walking a little bit further. I haven't had any sleep, okay? Totally sleep-deprived, totally middle of the night, nowhere. Walk a little further, and I hear this psst again. Nothing, okay? Look over my shoulder. Can't see anybody, but I hear these voices following me. The wind is going through. I look over the edge. There's a 30-foot drop below me over the side of the stones. And then I see some movement ahead of me out of the corner of my eye. I hear the little voices, and then and they fade. And then a cat comes running out from like the shadows and comes.
She was like a hooker magus.
She maybe that was her familiar. Maybe that's no.
Stops, looks at me. I have another theory. It's cat pimp. It's how they got around. They have pimp the cats for pimps. Cat looks at me. And I kind of look back at the cat, and I think I give this cat this terrified look, and then the cat fades away. But then I'm thinking, vampires, vampires, it's totally vampires out here.
You know,
and I can see, understand, they have a castle across the valley that's lit up, that they put floodlights on. I can see a castle up there, and I'm like, and I asked before, like, oh, can you visit the castle? Like, oh, no, that castle's closed. Well, why are there lights on it? It's just closed. Don't question these things.
So, wow. This is can you talk about your trip out to Italy? I haven't heard anything on how it went or how the lectures went or what it was like interacting with all the magicians out there. How was that?
Well, other than the werehookers who stalk you at night and want to drag you back to the castle to drain you of your blood and your euros.
Well, actually, they just want to drain your money.
It was great. It was great to see some great magicians were there. Jeff McBride was there. Max Maven was there. Nice guys. Fielding West, who's the comedy magician who I'm a big fan of, and I finally got to meet him and hang out with him. Hilarious, funny guy. Ed Alonzo was there. Ed Alonzo, great guy. A guy who works with him is Chris Mitchell. Chris was there. Dean Gunnarsson, World's Greatest Escape Artist, the guy that Randy handed the mantle to. Not only that, but Tony Curtis. Told Dean that he handed him the mantle of Houdini.
Oh, wow.
Nice.
So Dean's a great guy, so I got to spend a lot of time there. I climbed a 30-foot Roman wall when nobody was looking, and I got to the top of it, and I started to panic, not because I was about to fall, which I was, but because I realized I had to do a lecture the next day, and I was afraid that I'd have two arms in cast, but I very, like Spider-Man, carefully climbed back down.
That's awesome, man. When you get to touch history like that, like we're sort of spoiled here in the United States where, like here in Texas, you're hard-pressed to find anything older than 200, 250 years old. Like, you know, we became a state in, what, 1836 or whatever. But then, you know, and maybe when you get on the East Coast, you see some stuff from the, you know, 1500s, 1600s, maybe the 1400s. But, well, man, you get to Europe and go ahead.
In the words of Dean Gunnarsson, Canadian escape artist, is we're walking through part of part of the walls and stuff that was from a Roman city. Dean's like, you know, like back home, eh? We get all excited. We find like an Indian arrowhead. We're like, hey, look at this. Oh, this is awesome, eh? And look what we got here. They got actual Roman ruins.
Yeah. So like, to see, this is a man after my own heart.
And this is a part of this is where we're driving through and you look out there and you see these little old farmhouses that are 300 or 400 years old. And you go, that's pretty cool. And then later on, you see a little wall that was part of like a Roman boundary line, you know, and then you see the medieval castles and then you see the Roman boundary lines. And then you see a sign that says, oh, go see the ancient pictographs that, you know, early pre-civilization Europeans carved into the walls up here. Like, God. That's some deep history.
Really is. And you think about like how much of the world has changed and like what they believed in terms of, you know, witchcraft and
werehookers.
Exactly. The magic is still alive.
Those dumb savages back then and their crazy beliefs in werehookers.
I'd be dogging on the werehooker.
No, that was my adventure.
That's awesome, man. Do we have another sponsor?
Well, we certainly can let everybody know that the brand new Andrew Main Stories podcast is available for you right now. If you go onto iTunes, if you dig this podcast, you're going to dig that one. Andrew giving you all the details of his writings and fiction writing career, all the cool stuff that's coming up.
Well, let's sell it. It's every episode is going to have a story, a nice audiobook style story, short story for you to listen to with your ears, read by Mr. Justin Robert Young. That is the real heart of the podcast. Well, kind of think of it as Alfred Hitchcock presents Twilight Zone Theater.
Yeah, so you're going to show up as well each episode?
Yeah, I do a little bit of a talk before, and just what's new, and then Justin does the story, and then a little bit of wrap up. But it's about the story. It's not, you know, I'll do a little pontificating at the end, so you can cut it off and be like, all right, shut up, gas bag. But it's
oh, stop. It's, I mean, it is. Listen, it's all, if you like this podcast and you and if you've read any of Andrew's work, if you listen to me do the audiobook. Specifically for his work, you're just really going to dig it because it's all, you know, the brilliant mind of Andrew Mayne mixed with a original short story. Or I think we might serialize some of the new audiobook stuff right on there. So you'll be able to keep up and it's all free to you. So head on down to iTunes or andrewmayne.com/books.
And andrewmaynebooks.com. Yeah.
AndrewMayneBooks.com, and you'll be able to get those right there and download the podcast.
We've got iTunes, we've got an RSS feed, so whatever device, whatever format you want, MP3 format for everybody. Please subscribe.
Yeah.
If you like it, please
and
stay.
If you don't
on
like
iTunes,
it, you just shut your mouth. You keep your mouth shut.
I know werehookers.
They will come and bleed your wallet dry, mister.
So let's do some picks. Who wants to go first?
Oh, my God. I'm so ready to go first. I got two, actually.
Justin? Go, oh, no.
I saw a movie that I love.
Cabin in the Woods. My pick's Cabin in the Woods.
Oh, damn it. No. You can't steal mine. That's I just said.
No spoilers. No spoilers.
Okay. Have you seen it, Justin?
I have seen it. And, yeah, I saw it.
Oh, yeah. Andrew, have you seen it?
I have not seen it. All I know is a cabin in the woods.
Well, then I can't even talk about it. It's can you plug
you can't talk about it because it's my pick, Brian.
No,
Brian, here's just use superlatives.
Okay. Let me just say this without any specifics. It is utterly delightful when you see a movie that looks like one movie but turns out to be a different movie. I thought that District 9 did that very well. With the where it started off being a faux mockumentary about alien life and, you know, essentially about apartheid with aliens, and then turned into a horror movie, and then it turned into an action movie. That is part of what is delightful and wonderful about Cabin in the Woods. Cabin in the Woods will not appeal to everyone, but it did something that I've not felt in a while, which was utterly surprised me and asked very good questions early on, and gave a very satisfying change of there were delightful surprises and changes, and it took a genre of movie that I'm not predisposed to really like and made me utterly adore the movie.
And you should point out who wrote it.
Well, Joss Whedon, of course.
Joss Whedon wrote it. Drew Goddard, who directed and co-wrote Cloverfield, is the director there. It stars Chris Hemsworth, Thor, before he was Thor. It was between him being Captain Kirk's dad and being Thor. It's a movie sat on the shelf for several years because of the MGM bankruptcy. Let me give a little spoiler alert to Brian's review and say that the genre of movies that he found himself liking is horror. It's a tremendous essay on horror films in only a way that Joss Whedon could write it. The only thing I'd add is if you dug Dollhouse, the actor who played Topher, kind of the brains behind the Dollhouse, really kind of steals the show. Chris Hemsworth is amazing. And other than that, I don't know. I saw it with all of our friends on this podcast, Brett the Amtrekker, Roundsville, and we got into a bit of a fight because I felt, and if and when you see it, I felt that you should be able, when you're talking about the movie, to talk about the fact that the first scene is kind of very indicative of a different kind of movie than you might think from the trailer, and that's something that is legitimate to talk about. He kind of took the other tack, so I'll respect it for the spoiler phobes. However, rest assured,
an author we all like and respect has this habit of live tweeting while he watches movies. and insists he doesn't do spoilers. And the first three tweets told me more than I wanted to know before I walked in there.
Well, I'll tell you what. As we've discussed on this show before, I believe that in movies especially, questions are better than answers. And the questions that show up in the first 5 minutes are way better than most of the questions that I get from any horror movies of this variety. And
All right, so no talk about it anymore. I got to go see this, all right?
Yep, definitely
all right,
do.
Well, here, I just want to say one thing. It is a movie that, more so than anything that I could remember in the last 10 years, you want to buy your friend's tickets to see it, so just so you can talk about it. It is
okay,
a very, very...
Okay, I accept.
Talk. I will gladly buy you a ticket to go see this movie, Andrew. It's certainly that, and I think I'll just say this for anybody who's either seen it or hasn't seen it and wants to go watch it. I think it is a not without cause, but a very arrogantly written movie. And I don't think it's a bad thing.
Oh, you felt like they were making specific commentaries on the genre.
All right, already, guys. Come on.
That's all I'll say. All right. Arrogance was something that I came away from it with. And I liked it. I liked that it was that arrogant.
Yeah. Again, one of the greatest treats you can get from a movie is genuine surprise. And I don't think we've told you anything that will take away from the surprise. I think you will be surprised.
Yeah, no, I you know me, like, I even hate to watch trailers.
Yeah.
Like having part of it spoiled for me already by somebody. And sometimes people don't realize, and again, my little storytelling kind of brain, you can set something up and then all of them start going, and might maybe wrong, but you know, like I said, I thought the Sixth Sense trailer showed too much.
Yeah, sure. Well, you know. I mean, you know, a lot of these trailers, part of the you got to give it enough of the story that people know what they're in for. And so a lot of times they end up giving you the whole first third of the movie as the setup.
And that's, you know, some of the better, you know, directors who've asked for control, like J.J. Abrams and stuff, and Whedon, even extent, try to avoid that because they don't want to diminish that holy cow, that's awesome kind of moment. Because when you get in the theater and you wait for that moment to happen, it's different when that happens in the movie, and then you go out there and go, that was awesome. It's better to have people walk out of a theater going, that was awesome, than walking away from a trailer saying that.
I mean, well, that is true artistically. Unfortunately, I don't know that's true financially speaking.
Oh, no. Well, I mean, no, that's been, if you start looking at the pattern of some of the more successful films that have happened from, like, Christopher Nolan films, et cetera, some of the best movement, you know, that's the thing is the directors, the good ones who get control, know, like, do this stuff from the first third or the first off and even write stuff, but don't put this thing from the third act because you might get a great opening weekend, but if people go and see it and said, yeah, it was like the trailer,
that's what
you don't
I
get that buzz for the second week.
That's the biggest thing I'm afraid of with Prometheus is the latest trailers have really shown significant plot points, and I'm afraid that that there's more of the movie in the trailer than I would like there to be.
Yeah, you know, Lindelof on Twitter is trying to insist that even the leaks, the story leaks and all that, you know, aren't what we think, and so we'll see. So, Justin, do you have a pick? Or do you want to
picked Cabin in the Woods.
Yeah, no, he did. So that means I get to do my pick, which is The Legend of Korra, now on its third episode on Nickelodeon. They're giving away the episodes for free, so you might as well jump online. You can stream it. You can watch the third episode. If you haven't seen it, if you haven't seen any of those, I highly recommend you go watch the entire Avatar The Last Airbender series now up on Netflix, and I'm done.
I'm going to do a... It's a soft pick for the particular book that I read, but it's an endorsement for the writer and the series. And there's a science fiction writer, and you know we love Peter F. Hamilton, stories like that. There's a sci-fi writer by the name of Jack McDevitt, okay? McDevitt, right? And he writes a series of books that's about, takes place far, far future, way into the future, about a antique hunter who finds himself in all sorts of interesting adventures where, you know, looking up the history of some spaceship and trying to find an antique that's missing from it and a logbook leads to solving some sort of mystery. So it's kind of like Clive Cussler, but told from a, you know, a future way off in the future with sort of a deep history to it. And the one I just listened to was The Devil's Eye. It's not the strongest book that I've read of his stuff, but I enjoyed it. And it's somebody who's writing something about the far off future, but it's not overtly about aliens and things like that. It's about going to places and solving mysteries and finding clues in that. And so it's not so much these, you know, running around with laser guns and battle wars. It's this kind of more, imagine if you have people living in the future trying to solve the mysteries of the past, but their own past, and the idea of how much, if we rapidly expand to the, you know, the outskirts of the galaxy, details will get lost about origins and history, et cetera. And so it's kind of, it's a very neat. So Jack McDivitt's the author. The latest book is the one I just read or listened to was The Devil's Eye. Some of the other ones are a bit stronger, where there's Echo. And go take a look. If you're on Audible, go take a look at some of the books there. Look at the appeal for that. If you want some sort of kind of cool, deep sci-fi, because I'm always looking for new authors like Ian Banks, Peter F. Hamilton, Alistair Reynolds. You know, there's a group of these guys that write, I think, some pretty compelling, far-off SF stuff. And I'm going to add Jack McDivitt to that because I think these are pretty neat stories told from a pretty cool point of view.
Right on.
Yeah.
That's it for this episode of Weird Things. You guys, we should do this again.
Yeah, let's do it every week from now on till the end of time. Monday nights.
Are you, well, because people who are outside of the country, if they're like, what? Andrew was in Italy and I didn't get to see him? That sucks. Like,
actually, they're also, like, they're like, it's a me, Italian guy. Andrew was in Italy.
I'm leaving because I'm moving from Italy to Israel. Like, when will I get, when's going to be my time? When do I get to see Andrew Main?
So yeah, I will be in Israel next Monday, but we'll see. I might be able to get internet. You know, they're kind of technically savvy. Like it's like the second largest, you know, startup incubator in the world. So we'll see if I can get internet. If I'm not performing or lecturing, either way, there will be a Weird Things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There so will be Weird we'll Things for sure.
There'll definitely be
boys and girls,
and hopefully
children
Andrew.
Of all ages. Aegis, thank you so much for joining us. I'm very, very excited to, you know, by the time this comes out, we'll have heard about the Planetary Resources press conference, and they're going to come out and say, hey, we just wanted to make Justin, Andrew, and Brian look like idiots.
Turns know. Out our new project, Valentine's, we made one for you.
Yes.
Space Valentine's. They got
it's
stars.
Like Larry Page listened to this podcast and said, God, those guys are dumb.
And sparkles.
What if we could? What if we just fed news only to their IP addresses?
This one has a unicorn in space.
Told you.
Yeah. It's, so, yeah, we're talking about like, oh, yeah, they're going to do this. And then people are like, what? What? No. We'll find out. So my ear's about to pop from all the airplane travel. It's been weird.
Bye.
You want to sponsor the podcast? Do you have $30? If so, go to weirdthings.com/sponsor and you can have Justin say whatever you want. He's a trained ape.